Blog Talk Radio.
Good God. Oh, dear. Well, welcome to the Sybil Brunchens. Come now, don't sulk. We're trying to reacquire our connection with Sybil. Mommy, don't go anywhere. Oh, goodness. Oh, my goodness.
There you are. What happened? Our telephone line crashed?
Yes, I think there's squirrels on the wires, honey.
Ah, exactly. Or nuts in our chock full of nuts coffee cans. Darlings, bonjour, mes amis. We're back on the air. Mummy had a little bit of a glitch there. I am coming to you. This is Sybil Brunchen, and I am still in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Isn't that exciting? And the people here are the most enchanting people. They're enthusiastic, they're sparkly, they're well scrubbed, they're a little curvaceous, aren't they? I mean, there's a lot of cheese products up here, lots of cheese and chocolate around the clock. So it's really impossible to find a size 0 or 2 in the girls' shops up here. Mostly they're very curvaceous girls, dairy fed and wonderful. And as I said, they're all enthusiastic. And I am having a problem, though. Ohio is Ohioans and Pennsylvania is Pennsylvanians, but Minnesotans, I'm not quite sure of that. I'm going to look that up in my Rand McNally. I think it's either Minnesota. Is it Minnesotans? I'm not sure. It's something like that, but I'm going to look it up. I am coming to you live right now, not from the Cafe Berlin and the revolving ballroom there high atop the Chrysler Building. I am coming to you right now, believe it or not, from downtown Minneapolis, where I'm staying at the Hiawatha Heights Hotel, and it's the tallest hotel in the city. I'm on the 7th floor. And this is the penthouse. Actually, in this hotel, it's the 7.5 floor, but I don't know how you do that. I don't know how that, but I pressed that button on the elevator and it sort of takes me to Diagon Alley with Harry Potter. And I'm in the Daughter of the Moon Nokomis Bar and Grill right now. It's very exciting. It's got a wonderful Native American thing. And you get a little wooden tomahawk in every one of your gimlets. It's so cute. I am having a ball here in Minnesota, and I've been sending you my little tourettes every day. You've seen my Wayzata one and my Minnetonka one, and we've been to Apple Valley, and we've been to, oh, goodness, what are all the strange little towns? Half of them are Native American names, the Sioux tribe. Savage. I think that's politically incorrect. I can't believe that there's actually a town in Minnesota called Savage. It seems didactic, if nothing else. Wayzata, of course, White Bear, and there are no bears left, sadly. But the towns here have been really, really wonderful, and I love the way the people speak here. Oh, my goodness. They are so enthusiastic. They come up to you, and they say, oh, have you gone to the mall yet, did you know? And things like that. And, oh, did you see the prices in that Times Square souvenir shop? Now, did you? And it's just so sweet. They're always oomphy, and they always double-hand you. When they shake your hand, they give you both hands. And it's just their enthusiasm is infectious. No one is blasé in Minneapolis or in Minnesota, it seems, at all. I'm glad that I'm here. I'm glad that we're having such a cheerful show tonight, even though our topic is to be or not to be. And it's a bit of a carryover from last week's show, because last week's show was on hopelessness. It was on quitting and surrendering and acceptance or fighting on. We had a Newsweek last week that was just appalling. Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade their untimely deaths to suicide. And before that, we didn't even address the tragedy and the injustice of the former Playboy model who jumped to her death in Midtown Manhattan from a skyscraper after she pushed her own 7-year-old son to his death. We are hearing news all the time, bombarded by celebrities or just ordinary people in everyday life choosing ennui, choosing to be absent. And I think that any sensitive person today, and increasingly so, has probably contemplated suicide at one time or another. Suicide is as old as the hills. Cleopatra committed suicide. Brutus committed suicide. Shakespeare, to be or not to be, that is the question, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep no more. The whole speech is about whether Hamlet wants to go on with his life or not. And if he does go on with his life, what's the point? Because the struggle seems to be useless. You never seem to win. One of my favorite quotes of all time, and something that perhaps we should introduce to our children at a younger age, is that the good news and the bad news about being alive is that no one gets out of it alive. It seems like a terrible thing to say, but it frees you from so many of the useless and meaningless thoughts and desires of life when you realize that no one gets out of this alive. So you may as well choose all the wonderful things you can. You can choose to love someone. You can choose to love nature. You can choose to love a dog or a cat. You can choose to pat that baby on the head that's being wheeled by you on the sidewalk. You can choose to love the sun this afternoon. You can choose the rain tonight. You can choose to find appreciation as much as possible on the journey. And that's true whether you're an atheist or a deeply religious person. So if you're a religious person, you expect that there'll be something after this. So you can choose to be joyful and appreciative and grateful along the way. If you think there's nothing after this, well, doesn't that make you almost more in a position to choose to be grateful and appreciative and present and mindful along the way? If in fact a curtain is going to drop and there's going to be nothing after this, not even reincarnation, let alone paradise, if you literally are just an accident that the universe has farted out of its butthole, then in fact, if your life is nothing but strange accidents, then why not choose to taste tonight's dinner, to listen to that wonderful music you love, to go out and spend $5 on a few flowers for the dining room table? So you may as well choose. So I got all sorts of feedback last week on Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. It's funny, a lot of you message me afterwards and email me and private message me. I wish you would call in. And by the way, I'll give you that phone number in just a second. But a lot of you said that, and you said, but you could have gone on longer, or there's more to say, or I wish the show had been 2 hours long. So tonight our show is To Be or Not to Be. And is it better to forgive and forget and to immerse yourself in a life of forgetfulness, or is it better to fight? Is it better to fight back? Is it better to take a stand? Is it better to invest in calling out injustices? Is it better to walk by someone who's fallen flat on their face on the sidewalk and hope that it all works out? Or is it better to put your own packages down and go to the person and lift them up and help them out? Do you get paid for it? Do you get anything out of it? Probably not. You might not even get a thank you. I hold the door for people every day. And people breeze by me as though the door was an electric door. They don't even say thank you. But where do we go? Where do we go? To be or not to be? Are you going to be in the world and of the world? That's another one of my favorite quotes from movies. People say, what are your favorite quotes from movies? One of my favorite ones is Audrey Hepburn's line from Sabrina, where she returns from Paris. She writes her father. This is that 1950s movie where she is the chauffeur's daughter and she's gone over to learn how to cook in an expensive school. And she says, "Father, I have learned things here in Paris. I've learned more than just how to cook. I have learned to be in the world and of the world. And I'm not going to define that for you. I'm going to let you figure out what that means. But I believe in trying to be in the world and of the world. And that means, as I always say, my boring old advice, being mindful, being present, and being grateful. It's very, very, very hard to try to do those things every day. But the alternative is much harder. If you don't do those things every day a little bit, just a little, a thimbleful of those three things, and to be in the world and of the world, the consequences are much more grotesque. It's like not doing your geometry homework. You start doing it at the beginning of the semester, and then by final exams, you're not an idiot. But if you don't do a little bit of your homework every day, then that Sunday night before your eighth grade final exam on geometry, you're nothing but a big, fat, jiggly bag of monkey pudding, and you don't know anything. You can't tell a triangle from an octagon. So every day, a little bit of homework, and that's what it's going to take. And that's what Hamlet does at the end of the play. It does end tragically, doesn't it? I mean, there's poisoned beverages. I don't know if Jim Jones was in Elsinore, but someone drinks something that doesn't work out. It's probably grape Kool-Aid. And then someone eats something, and then someone pricks someone else with a dagger which has been dipped in grape Kool-Aid. And then by the time the curtain comes down, 11 people are dead, and three more have been burned beyond recognition. Something dramatic like that. But at least Hamlet tried. And I think that's nice Shakespeare's, Bill Shakespeare's message to us is to try. So anyway, call in. Gwendolyn, I don't have the phone number in front of me. Can you give us the phone number, please?
I certainly can, Mommy. It's guest call in number, and that's 323-784-9639. 323-784-9639. That's the call-in number for...
Thank you. Thank you. Someday I'm going to have to see if that's an acronym, because sometimes people's phone numbers do end up spelling funny things like, please touch my butt, or, my nose is large, or something like that. I love when they spell something and then people have no trouble remembering them. 323-784-9639. Our operators are standing by here at the Daughter of the Moon Natomas Bar and Grill. And so we're doing that right now. I would like to, I'm hoping I'm going to get some private messages here, to remember you can message me on Facebook. I have a couple of quick announcements. You are listening right now to Come Now, Don't Sulk if you're a late arrival here. This is part of the Here Be Monsters Network on Blog Talk Radio. Gwendolyn Holden Berry and her Uncle Neil are on tonight. They're in the sound booth. Gwendolyn, of course, is my ingenious producer. And my tech person, and she created the Here Be Monsters Network. And so I'm honored to be part of their stable of entertainment. I want to make a couple of quick announcements while we're waiting. Mummy is writing again this summer, her columns for Fire Island News. That's the newspaper that goes all up and down the 17 towns of Fire Island, and then all of the towns on the South Shore. Well, maybe all of Long Island. I was going to say the South Shore, but it actually covers all of Long Island. Please do find a copy. And remember, Fire Island News is free, free, free. No, you don't have to spend $1.50 on it. It's free, and it's full of wonderful, wonderful stories and anecdotes, including some of Mummy's. By the way, on my Facebook pages, and I have several of them now covering different things, if you share any of my announcements, my anecdotes, my recipes, my jokes, my stories, my columns, even ads for this, for Come Now, Don't Sulk, when you share them, your name is written on a ticket. And that ticket goes into our raffle bin. And at the end of the month, we do a drawing for a Sybil Prize, and I just want you to know that it's a wonderful prize from Zazzle, the Zazzle company, Zazzle.com. Check out other Sybil Brunchen products there. And the more times you share, the more tickets go in. So your chances of winning increase the more you share our wonderful announcements about all sorts of things, both serious and comical announcements. Also, we want to announce the Professor Budinsky has made a return this summer to Cherries on the Bay in Fire Island, Cherry Grove, right there on the bay. Cherries on the Bay has been there for years. Wonderful bar. Uncle Johnny is the bartender there. And our shows are the Smarty Pants Trivia Challenge with funny trivia for everyone, prizes and surprises at Forest every Friday. We'll see you there this Friday. And bring your thinking caps, darlings. You could be a winner. Do we have any calls yet?
Not yet, Mommy.
Well, then I'm going to address something to you, Gwendolyn, and to you, Uncle Neil. So many people, part of the forgive and forget, the to be or not to be and the forgive and forget. Okay, forgive and forget or fight. I am hearing so many people, it's almost like the country is being run by Sally Bowles in Cabaret. People cover their ears and say, I don't want to think bad thoughts. I don't want to think about that. And it's true. It's true. We're bombarded by news more than any group of people in any age has ever been. We are simply swamped by news. As a matter of fact, it's taken on a conspiracy. There's a whole conspiracy idea now that the more news we are bombarded with, we will become desensitized and we will literally turn into lowing cattle. We will simply be mooing cows and we will be herded this way or that according to who is shouting the loudest at any given minute. It's awfully cynical. You know, that's so cynical. Do you agree with that at all?
There's a place where that is true. And I think that's with people, but not the networks as much as a conspiracy by the other. I think it's a conspiracy of one to each who chooses to sit with nothing but the ongoing bombardment. Either they're living the drama and that's their addiction, or, gee, Mommy, I mean, there are just people out there, too, who are, you know, it's their excuse for not dealing with their own lives, you know?
I agree with that. I agree with that completely. I have many friends, some friends that I adore, by the way, who chose not to vote in the last presidential election because they felt that, quote, neither candidate was any good. And what I would say, well, do you think one candidate is a little better than the other? They would say yes, but they still weren't happy enough to vote. And, of course, we saw how that turned out. I am one of those few people – well, I'm not one of those few people. I shouldn't say that. That sounds arrogant. I am one of the few people I know, for instance, that we listened to both MSNBC and Fox Network. I do watch the Fox Network. I do watch CNN. And people say, oh, how can you do that? How can you watch that? And how can you watch that? And it's because I want to know what both sides say. I want to hear perspectives from both points of view. And I want to know, and I'm not going to tip my hand, although you probably said that, I want to know what the enemy is saying. So I don't cover my ears and run screaming from people who espouse things that I can't stand. I want to know just how toxic their outlook is. I want to know exactly what they're saying to each other, and I want to know exactly what they're saying to everybody, even the lovely, enchanting, enthusiastic Minnesotans. I want to know what everyone is hearing, and then I can make a wiser choice for myself. So I am not of the Sally Bowles school. I think she was an idiot, and she probably died of either a botched abortion or VD, or was, you know, destroyed and it was lost in the Berlin, blitz. She was foolish, and she kept singing her song, and then one day it was all over because she had chosen not to see what was going on in Berlin around her. I do not want to be one of those people on a train who thinks that Donald Trump doesn't mean us any ill, and then suddenly we're pulling up to a factory with chimneys with smoke coming out of them. That's just not going to be the way I go. You know what? That's just not going to be the way I go. So
no,
I feel that it's better to engage than not.
No matter how lovely a corpse you would, when you're finally laid out, no matter how lovely a corpse you are, you still don't have to march gleefully to it.
Exactly. she looked so great in her, you know, but no, that's not going to be me. No. So I think that it's better to engage than not engage. I think it's better not to forget. I think it's better to fight on and to be in and of the world. Let's go back to the thing, first of all, about the conspiracy. Do you guys feel that there is a conspiracy of any sort on – I know that you sort of answered it, Gwendolyn, but do you think there is a barrage? Was it Goebbels who said, tell the people a lie, make sure it's a big lie, and keep repeating it loudly over and over and again, and then people will believe it. Do you believe that that is something that's going on in this country right now?
Well, I do. I in fact do think that that's happening. I think that's the extent of their intellectual ability there, is to repeat endlessly whatever is the most defensive posture that will blame anyone but them. Or it's like grade school in the White House right now. And they're
right.
Conducting a grade school conspiracy to say outright lies. But I don't know if you've noticed, Mommy, but the press is now pressing him very much so. He couldn't get a word in edgewise on Friday.
Absolutely.
And that is a good sign, in my opinion, because, there are things going on here that, as you just said metaphorically, you know, we don't want to be chugging up the train track heading towards the stacks. And Z and me might be on the first trains out, you know. It's a conspiracy, sure, of a White House to drape anything they can over the facts, so that they are getting away with what they need to get away with. And I think that most of the news, in fact, I heard that there was a Fox show that actually called it out today, too. It's very sad. It's very sad. But it's also a moment when everybody gets to stand and say, I'm either Sally Bowles or I am Sabrina. And who do you want to be? Because Sally just stuck her head in the sand. And I do see people who don't want to have anything to do with the negativity. I'm sure you do too.
Right. Well, it's, you know, the whole thing is very tricky. I was watching Chuck Todd the other day on Meet the Press, the longest running news show, television show in history. And Chuck Todd, I remember a time when Chuck Todd was very even in his delivery. He was very even-handed. And, of course, Tim Russert before him, before his sudden death, was extremely even-handed. Tim Russert was impossible for anyone to nail down. He would be Clinton as he was on George Bush. He was ruthless with everyone. He was known for being an equal opportunity nose puncher. And that was what was wonderful about him, was whatever he said, you knew you were getting. I wish Tim Russert was alive today to do Meet the Press. I'd love to see what he would say in the face of all of what we've been going through. It would be astounding, because he was also very even-handed and was an equal opportunity nose puncher. Perhaps not as feisty as Tim Russert, but certainly equal opportunity has gone way left. Not so much that his politics are left, but he gets on there now with his panel of people and simply drag Trump and Huckabee, Sarah Huckabee, and all of them back and forth over red hot coals. And the reason he does is because we've been left no alternative but to call them on the fact that they lie. Even that Quisling, Megyn Kelly, that Fox Network pinup girl, centerfold, whatever she was, plaything for Roger Ailes. Once she left there, even she's been dragged, sort of kicking and screaming, to a realization that her heroes, you know, her old white man heroes, are a bunch of lunatics or psychopaths. And it's so funny to see this, and yet we still have what all the newscasters are saying is a granite hard core of people that refuse to believe anything is going wrong, and they're very much of the forgive and forget. Well, Donald Trump is saying this because he's trying to be a strong leader, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like everyone is being enabled. Jeff Sessions is basically a nice man in between a rock and a hard place. The Republicans can't even get their own story straight. They're turning on each other. You have Republican senators nailing Trump and Sessions. You have Lindsey Graham every other week. Well, he waves like the wind. I don't know what's going on there. I wish he would just come out of the closet and open a hair salon. But he keeps waving back and forth. Well, Trump is Trump has got our best interests. I can't keep up with his opinions from one way to the next. But the bottom line is it's hard to know where to stand and what position to hold in this world of bombardment, of conspiracy theories, and of, you know, constant headlines. Headlines, not du jour, headlines of the minute. Every 10 minutes, something hits the news, and it's the end of the world. Puerto Rico is ancient history. Puerto Rico could disappear like Atlantis in the ocean right now, and we wouldn't hear about that for probably a week because there's too much going on in the Pentagon and in the Senate. It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
It is. It's not.
It's not a good place to be.
No, I mean, even William F. Buckley would be calling this crowd out.
William F. Buckley would be furious because, like it or not, Buckley was like an ancient Roman. See, that's the Republicans that I grew up with, the New England Republicans. They all, it's very much a meritocracy. So they were very cold to any kind of welfare, but they were cold to welfare for the poor and for the rich. They believed in those kind of like Puritan values of hard work. You know, one of the first fairy tales I was ever taught was the grasshopper and the ant. But, you know, the ant was saving and saving and working, the grasshopper was fiddling and singing, and it was summer and it was lovely, and the grasshopper would never work, and he would sing songs, mostly written by Walt Disney people, and the ant would keep working, and then finally when the temperature dropped, the grasshopper was frozen to death, and the ant was safe and secure in his home with all of his co-workers. And even in the most sanguine versions of that fairy tale, the ant cooked pity on the grasshopper and took him in and fed him, and the grasshopper thanked the ant and promised to be a better person the spring, which of course was a bunch of bull crap. You know that, because it's nonsense. Ants survive the winter and grasshoppers do not. But the bottom line was that was one of the first fairy tales, and it was meant to be this message of Republican meticulousness and the capitalist dream in New England. And William F. Buckley was totally that and would be appalled, as would Eisenhower. And Eisenhower would be horrified at what happened, and especially with the military complex that he predicted, that strange industrial military complex that he warned us about as he left office. Warned us about that he said the 1960s would be a time when this country could be swallowed by paranoia and constant saber building, saber hammering. We would always be making more and more weapons and ruin ourselves in an economy based on fear, paranoia, and nuclear weapons. And look where we are.
Mommy, I just wish I could hear at least one journalist step up with a quote from William F. Buckley, like he did say, "I won't insult your intelligence by suggesting that you really believe what you just said." If one would say that to Trump, I would applaud.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we all know that, he's an amazingly intelligent man. Even if you didn't love his politics, you had to hand it to him for his intelligence. And I'm going to say something else that is absolute heresy. The young don't care, but people our age do care. I have long said that Richard Nixon would not only have been shocked by Trump, he would have been shocked by George Bush the younger. I personally think Nixon would have been shocked by Bush the elder, but he definitely would have been absolutely astounded at the mediocrity of Bush the younger, because for whatever character flaws and personal problems and neuroses that Richard Nixon had, no one could ever fault him on his intelligence, his curiosity, and his expansion. He had a view of the world and of life that was expansionate. No wonder he was friends with John Kennedy when they were both junior senators, you know, and they were both young. They both were cut from the same cloth and then veered into slightly different directions. And, of course, they both had terrible character flaws. I mean, they both, you know, Kennedy was a womanizer and was engaged in all sorts of bizarre things with the mafia and mafia pals and God knows what. And Nixon was, you know, bigoted and small-minded in many ways and petty. But having said that, Nixon would have – what is it, honey?
He was not an isolationist the way these people in D.C. are right now.
Exactly. And he was – yeah, he was not that. And he was also – he wouldn't have tolerated willful ignorance. Like it's almost this hubris, this pride in being – in not knowing. George Bush started it. George Bush was the one who said, I'm the decider. People asked him, well, do you read a lot of newspapers? He admitted, I'm not that curious. Oh, dear God. And the offshoot of I'm not that curious was Sarah Palin. Poor John McCain was saddled with a moron, someone who should have been hospitalized for severe intellectual damage, albeit the governor of Alaska. I mean, she was severely damaged, and this was what the Republican Party was comfortable with. They were comfortable with the next step and the next step, and look at what we've got now. A man who is gigantically ungifted, glad to be a bully, glad to be a brewski in some stupid roadside bar room. He's a roadhouse bully. He should pull up in a chopper, you know, and looking like ZZ Top. It's like, what's going on? This is the leader of the free world and our allies week by week. I mean, since we've done our last show, the erosion of the goodwill with our allies is astounding. Astounding. By the way, to make everyone laugh a little bit, I want you to go to my Facebook page and see my new entry, Let's Move to Canada. I'm writing new entries on how we should, if we're going to move to Canada, we should learn our nice neighbors to the north, their ways, their vocabulary, and their traditions before we barge in on them. So, you know, we don't want them building a wall against us. So let's all move to Canada, but read Mummy's latest chapters on Let's Move to Canada. Do we have a phone call tonight? What is going on? Has your phone been turned off, Gwendolyn, and you haven't told Mummy? I'll pay the bill. I don't understand why no one's calling in.
I think it's on. I think it's on. It comes right into the switchboard. We had one flash up while you were talking, I was going to tell you, but it flashed up for like 2 seconds and then flashed down. Somebody cut. We had the little trouble with you coming on, so it could be Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's true. Well, we won't complain because they are our hosts, and God forbid they get cross with us like Louis B. Mayer did with me in the 1950s. Suddenly I got the heave-ho with, you know, John Garfield, and we were both waiters in restaurants in the East Coast because we couldn't get work again. I would like to just address something to you. Gail Sondergaard was one of our – she was the maitre d' at the restaurant that we worked in. We were all blacklisted. It was absolutely horrible. But Danny Kay came in every day and tried to, you know, overtip us. Well, that's another story for another time. One thing I want to address with both of you is the forgive and forget thing. So we'll move out of the political world. How do you feel about forgiving and forgetting with family? What about when a family member, whether it's about politics and you've had a fist fight over the Thanksgiving table about politics or even just personal issues, I've spoken to more people this week, more charming people. Oh, by the way, more charming people up here in Minnesota who are not speaking to their mothers, their brothers, their father, their grandfather, their sister, it's fascinating. It's the 21st century malady. People no longer speaking to loved ones, specifically family members, even among the most lovely, charming, don't you know people in the world. What is that phenomenon and what do we do about it? Do we forgive and forget? Do we forgive? Do we forget? Do we forgive and forget? Do we hold a grudge? Do we, quote, stand for what we believe in? Where do we fall on that spectrum? What do you think? Uncle Neil, what do you think?
Well,
he cleared his throat. Ladies and gentlemen at home, he cleared his throat, which means everything that he says from now on is complete prevarication. Please go on, Uncle Neil.
Thank you. I've been faced with a situation recently with a 30-year friendship, and some terrible things were said, and I was very hurt by some things, and I'm trying to find that place of forgiveness within myself, but I think I have to process the feelings of, you know, being angry and upset first, but I want to forgive and forget, but I don't know this time if I can. It was just that bad where I thought I could forgive and forget, and my spirit tells me that I want to, but I'm having a hard time doing it, honestly.
I understand. Was this, without revealing too much or compromising you on national radio, and you do understand that I have millions of listeners right now around the world. I actually have 33 listeners, but they are on all six continents, believe it or not. I have listeners in Australia, in Pakistan, in Europe, and in Akron, Ohio, which I think is interesting. But anyway, back to you. What I was going to say, Neil, is without compromising your situation, were the remarks, first of all, were they a long time in coming? Were there any in an earthquake, when you have the little premature shocks, you know, the little warning things, were there any warning signs in the last 6 months?
Yeah, actually the last year, yeah.
Little quarrels or little sideways remarks that were said with rolled eyes or anything?
Yeah, a lot of that person tearing me down and my thoughts and beliefs and the way I was living and doing and being, and I just finally said, you know what? I'm not going to allow you to do this to me anymore. So I stopped communicating with the person. But yes, there were signs.
Did you confront the person, or did you just stop? Did you just disappear?
No, I wanted to talk about it because of, you know, 30-year friendship. I felt like I could say and be totally open and honest and communicate, right? That's the
right.
way I am.
Yeah, you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I am that way, right, Gwen?
You come right out.
So I was definitely speaking my mind and being honest and trying to work through it. I thought it would just kind of go away, you know, but it didn't.
And then there was one particular incident where you just said, I'm walking away.
Yes.
In other words, you didn't break dishes or, you know, throw a chair across the room. You just simply walked away.
Yes, I did. I walked away. Yes.
You know, being of Irish and English and Scottish extraction, I always joke with people. I have a fuse 4 miles long. My fuse goes on forever and ever and ever and ever. I happen to be attracted to Italians, and the Italians I know are passionate and sexy, and they're always very pretty people, and they know their food and their fashion, and they're more available, shall I say, to their emotions, and their fuses, in my opinion, are a bit shorter, and when their fuses go, it's a lot of Chinese New Year's fireworks on the sidewalk. It's a boom, 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 boom. Now, being from New England, and being, as I said, Aquarius and Irish and English and all of that, I find, are you there?
Yeah.
You're there. I find that their temper tantrums, the first time that I got yelled at by my Italian lover, I was devastated because yelling in my world was the end of the world. When you yelled, you didn't like the person anymore. And when you were angry and broke a dish, that was hate, and they hated you, and that was it. And of course, that was very naive, and I was a young girl at the time. But I learned over time that they would turn around. The Italians would turn around and say, "But I love you desperately, and of course we're going to disagree on things." And they were right. They were right. Of course you can have a fight as a married couple, or as friends, or as family members. You can fight, and you can agree to disagree, and then you can move on, and you can maybe apologize, or you can let it simmer down and apologize 2 days later. Whatever. The point is it's not about grudges, and it's about being mature in the way you disagree and etc. Mm-hmm. As I said, my fuse is 4 miles long. When my fuse goes, though, and I finally say the bad words and I use the loud tone of voice, I have been described as a neutron bomb. I have said things in the street to cab drivers that have run red lights and almost run me over, and I have said king things involving not only their backgrounds, where they come from. I go into graphic descriptions of their anatomical parts and what should be done to them. I go into graphic details about their mothers' anatomies, their mothers' sexual practices with barnyard animals. I become a lexicon of horror and Satanism because my fuse is 4 miles long, and when it's gone, it is gone. So, and I have had breakups with people, with a friend, where they have mistreated me beyond the beyond the beyond. And instead of letting them know in a timely fashion, I have waited, and then the fuse was gone, and I had to nuke their home, and indeed their base. Having said that, I'm trying to come the other way. I'm trying to figure out how not to be that. I'm trying to forgive. I think I do forgive, and on many levels I do forget, but I'm trying to be more generous in my approach. So I'm eager to hear other people's journeys through this with family. I have a relative that I have not spoken to now in 27 years. He is an ultra-right wing, I would say a neo-fascist, born again. He's a religious fanatic. It's not enough to say that he's a Christian soul. He is a religious fanatic. He thinks that what's going on with the children being separated from their parents is allowable. They are already criminals for even trying to come into the country. And even if they applied for citizenship, we don't need them or their kind anymore. I have not spoken to this person in almost 30 years. And I don't, it's very hard for me to find a way to find any common ground with that person. So, what were you going to say?
I wanted to share with you that something that's been a great gift to me. In fact, in my life, I think I've gotten two great gifts. My mother gave me the gift of love, and her husband, the son of a bee, gave me the gift of forgiveness.
Lovely.
Long story short, I got put on the pad by, my spiritual betters, if you will, from on high. And I was tasked with the task of forgiving my stepfather. And I didn't know how I could do it, but I needed to be who I am, you see. And yeah. I did what I think Louise Hay was guiding me at the time to say, well, you act as if. So for a couple of minutes every day for a few weeks, I went and I pretended in my chair for 30 seconds or 2 minutes, however long I could, that I had forgiven the the SOB. And I kept doing it. And I something happened, and I got off it, and I didn't follow it. And then someone walked into my place of business looking for some counseling. And this young woman sat down, and they laid out the cards, and I realized right away that this young person had the same problem I did, which was not getting on with my life, carrying a lot of extra baggage around, and only harming myself by carrying bad feelings and hate. And
right.
So I told her this, and I said at that time, it was the first time I said it, I said, you know, I got two gifts in life. My mother gave me love, and my stepfather gave me forgiveness. And you know what it was all about, Mommy? It was all
what?
About me forgiving myself.
Right.
That's always right. What forgiveness is. And we do have a caller.
Oh, great. Great.
From the 916 area code. Your mic is open.
Oh, hello there.
Hi there.
Hi there. I'm sorry I haven't been able to call in earlier. We were kicked off the internet, and we just got back on. So I wanted to call in and say hello, and I'm not sure what you were talking about, but whatever it was, I love it, and I agree with it.
Who is this?
This is Richard.
Richard. Richard Glazer.
Yes.
Richard, how are you? We're talking about forgive
and
forget.
Are you talking about, you know something? I have had hours and hours and hours of therapy and paid hundreds and thousands of dollars about this issue. And because I'm obsessive compulsive, I can't let it go.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly. That's part of your talent, though, Richard, being a great musician and musicologist, is your OCD is
exactly.
Also, yes. So that anal compulsiveness is what makes you
yes.
The great artist you are. And it is the cross you have to bear to your own Calvary Hill
we
to be nailed to.
We pay a price, as you know, Sybil, we pay a price for sensitivity in this
yes,
world.
Yes, we do. And we can pay them in many different directions, can't we? We can pay all
absolutely.
Sorts of them. You know, it's not one tax. It's like a whole bunch of taxes we pay. One thing I want to say is that you said you've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in therapy. But I'm hoping that in just a few minutes here on the air with Mummy, you'll be completely cured and look, no fee whatsoever. Isn't that delightful?
Mummy is the best. There's nobody like
Mummy. When are you coming back to the East Coast, darling, to the right coast from the left
coast?
It
reminds me, remember that cover on the New Yorker magazine about New York takes up like 98% of the country and the
yes.
rest of the country is like 2%?
Those are Saul Steinberg. Aren't those Saul Steinberg cartoons?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I just remember the cover of that New Yorker magazine.
He's
famous.
A genius, yes. I love those. When are you coming? Are you going to come soon?
I'll be back in New York in November.
Okay, well, I'm going to put that in my calendar with a question mark, and then we're going to go to Sardi's again.
I'm doing a concert with Charles Prince, who's a conductor in New Jersey, and Charles Prince is the, besides being a prince of a guy, he's the son of Hal Prince and the grandson of Saul Chaplin.
Oh, my gosh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so
what a provenance he has.
Yes, indeed. I mean, his grandfather, his mother is Saul Chaplin's daughter, and of course Saul Chaplin was part of the MGM machine. I mean, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and American in Paris.
Exactly.
Wasn't
he related to Charlie Chaplin as well?
No relation.
Oh,
I
thought he was.
No relation. No. He came out from the Lower East Side in the 20s or late 20s, early 30s to give a crack at Hollywood. He came out with Phil Silvers and Sammy Kahn. The three of them got in a car together and came out to Los Angeles.
That's wonderful.
And I can tell you the town will never be the same after Phil Silvers was there.
Exactly. I adored Phil Silvers. Do you have any – I love that you admitted your own situation with having a hard time forgiving
yes,
and forgetting.
Very difficult.
Without tipping your hand, and we only have a couple of
yeah.
minutes, but
sure.
Do you feel – In show business, there are
yeah.
so many stories of people being permanently estranged from former coworkers, former, lyricists, composers, you know, lyricists, composer teams, writing teams, acting teams.
Absolutely.
The stories about Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis.
I think it was Yip Harburg that used to make Harold Arlen. You made him cry.
Yes.
You made him cry because he got so frustrated with him.
Yes, yes.
So,
there was no great chemistry between Richard Rodgers and Hammerstein. They never were buddies or pals, nor was Richard Rodgers particularly supportive of Lauren's Hart as Lauren's Hart went downhill. So, yeah, it's interesting how people finesse. It's funny, we look at famous couples, either married couples or famous professional couples, and we assume everything is sunny and hunky-dory. And yet they, even the icons, have their own problems with these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's almost the human condition. And like you say, when the people who are very sensitive and being in the arts, you have to be, I mean, that just comes with the talent that the person has. You have to be sensitive. I mean, you, in a world that is not so, and it's getting less sensitive in today's world. I mean, it's just getting less. You have to have a thick leather skin, but have this incredibly sensitive heart. I'm reminded of a quote that Michael Feinstein said in his book. He said, if I could count how many times people said, you're never going to play in this town of Los Angeles ever again, I'd have a lot of money. When he was breaking into show business,
yeah.
I can tell you how many times people told me, you'll never play in this town again. I mean, it's just how people. I don't know. I wish I had the answer. I don't have it. I think
it makes you great. It makes you grateful though for those rare occasions when someone rejects you, but is pleasant about it. This week I sent in more material.
Rejection is fine. Rejection is fine. Rejection is a part of this business. That's okay. But you clarified it by saying being rejected in a courteous, respectful way.
Right.
You see, but that you don't even get that anymore. That doesn't even happen. It's not.
Well,
courteous.
I do want to say this. I want to say this out of respect for the New Yorker magazine. I sent in some writing to the New Yorker as I have done before, and I got my wonderful immediate response. From them, their form letter addressing me as me, not as dear subscriber or dear anything. And they said, thank you for your storyette and your submission. If you don't hear from us for 90 days, you probably won't. Thank you again for your little, your nice offering, and goodbye and good luck. And this is the world we live in where I'm so used to being kicked in the pants that I literally wept for 20 minutes out of gratitude. And put the razor blade. I put the razor blade away
tub. I mean, it's just nice. You know that you have. You know, it's just a nice thing to do. And I'll tell you, I think the real key to it all of protecting yourself in this world that we live in, of jealousy, of viciousness, of infighting, of differences of opinion, of being mean to each other. I think the key to it all, and I'm just speaking from an idealistic view right now, but the key to it all is surrounding yourself with people that love you, people that you care about, and people that want the best for you, and vice versa. And that's the environment that you create for yourself, that you surround yourself with people that love you, believe in your talent, believe in what you do, and you do the same for them.
I agree. That's part of my mantra, which is being present, being mindful, and being grateful. You try to invite as much light and laughter and love into your every day, every minute, and surround yourself with people and things that bring you that. And that's the best defense.
We had very detailed conversations about this very subject at Sardi's restaurant last year.
We did.
For 5.5 hours, sitting at the mummy table.
Sardi's is going to give us free dinners for a week when we get back with all these plugs, these free plugs. I'm so glad that you reminded me of
now,
all
where
those
are you
things.
Right now? Where are you, mummy?
I'm in Minneapolis, and I'm in the Daughter of the Moon Nokomis Bar and Grill right now. Biotop Hiawatha Heights Hotel. It's wonderful here.
Is that downtown Minneapolis?
Yes, it's downtown, literally downtown Minneapolis.
So everything's connected, right? By bridges, by walkways.
Yes,
you can walk everywhere
walkways.
You need to go.
Yes,
right.
And this week we had to use them because it was 93 degrees. So
right,
it was
you had
a
to
weird
use 93 degrees.
Thing.
Yeah, now, there's a great steakhouse in downtown Minneapolis called Manny's.
I know. We're going to go there tomorrow. Thank you.
Oh, good.
We're going to go
it's
there tomorrow night.
It's an institution. It's wonderful.
Listen,
so, yeah,
Richard, I'm
so
running out of time.
Okay,
I'm running
good.
Out of time.
Have a great time.
So glad you called, Richard.
And I'm so glad you called. And the Mrs. Richard Glazier, Jan, also a.k.a. Jan Glazier, sends her love and how much she loves you. And how much we love you, and we love listening to your show, and you are a treasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That means the world to me coming from you too, folks. I'm going to be booking a trip your way soon, so we will keep in touch on that. We'll absolutely. We'll wreck the town out there.
You know it. We'll broadcast from Sacramento, California, as your producer says, area code 916.
That's terrific. Richard, thank you so much for calling in.
Absolutely. Okay.
You have a good night.
We'll talk soon.
Yes. Love you.
Okay. Love you too. Good night.
Good night. That's wonderful. I just love Richard and Jan. It's so much, it's so sweet that they called in. I want to do a quick shout out because we're running out of time. I want to shout out to Chris March, the famous costume designer and fashion designer, who was on Project Runway's fourth season. He actually finished fourth that year, although his clothing, his ideas, his imagination absolutely was unforgettable. Even people who've forgotten all the other contestants that year, that season, except for, of course, Christian Siriano, the winner. But Chris March, I believe, even though he came in fourth, was the most memorable one. He did Harrison's out of human hair. He did fabulous costumes. Chris March's clients include Madonna, Cirque du Soleil, Prince, Beyonce, Lady Gaga, Mugler, and Meryl Streep. He had an incredible career. And for those of you that don't know, and this is very interesting, with all the internet and everything, he was very seriously injured and had some serious medical setbacks and issues and nearly died. And I wrote this tonight to him, and I want to just read it very quickly. Chris March, so many of us didn't know any of the things that had happened to you, but that is the way of the world. Even with all this new technology, the internet, and faster and more thorough communication to every part of the world, the downside is that there is too much information and really dire and important things can slip through the cracks or get buried under a mountain of mud. At any rate, the word on your situation and your challenge is out, and folks from all over the world will be touching base with you. God bless and hold you on your road to recovery. Make sure to surround yourself with great food, terrific music, and people who fill you with light, love, and laughter. Have gorgeous flowers near you, preferably a living plant that nourishes and inspires you, and try to pet a dog or a cat every once in a while. The eyes of an animal are the most open, trusting, innocent, and connected to God of all. Remember, too, you are not alone on your journey. You are surrounded by folks who struggle, survive, and triumph every day. Be a happy warrior on your return. Fight the good fight. You are so very special, and the world is waiting for your return and inspiration. And for those of you that would like to, you can go to Chris March's page on Facebook, or you can go to GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com, and enter Chris March. There is a GoFundMe fundraiser for him for his medical expenses and his convalescence, and I encourage you all to do that. I would like to thank tonight Blog Talk Radio, and especially my producer, Gwendolyn Holden Berry. Hi, Wayne and Jack. I am proud to be part of the Here Be Monsters company. And our sponsor tonight is, of course, DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Go to their site and purchase some of their fine products. I'd like to say a big thank you again to Richard and Jan for calling in tonight. And I want to say hello to Miss Yorishi. And, of course, my own Mr. Payamas. Mr. Payamas, I love you. We will see you next Monday again, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Gwendolyn, Uncle Neil, thank you for being here tonight on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mommy.
Wonderful.
Gwendolyn, I'm...